This is CliffCentral.com.
Neil Harbison is a Catalan-raised, North Irish-born cyborg artist and a trans-species activist. He's based in New York City. And I've got to tell you, this is one of the most interesting biographies I've read in a long time. You came in here, you have your antenna, you're the first person who's had that recognized as a body part rather than just as an accessory, which I suppose people would have insultingly called it before. I'm fascinated by so many aspects of your art, your personality, the things that you're an activist for. I don't even know where to start, but let's begin with what is in front of me in terms of a physical description. You have this antenna, which is a permanent part of you. You can see things like you can smell and taste color, I suppose, in a way that other people can't. This antenna gives you electromagnetic information that the rest of us don't have. It's quite an interesting idea, but for you, it's also a part of your life. It's a part of your body. It's to me extraordinary. How did this journey of yours begin, Neil?
Well, I was studying music, and when I was studying music, I was encouraged to use technology in music, but I wasn't that interested in using technology in music. So I was interested about the type of technology that actually could allow us to sense more. There's so much that surrounds us that we cannot sense. If we compare ourselves with other species have senses and perceptions that we as humans don't have. So now that there's technology that can actually sense things that humans cannot sense, if we merge with these sensors, we can actually then sense these realities that are around us but that have not been revealed yet. So
we have sight, smell, touch, sound, and taste, right?
Well, we have maybe 5 sensory organs, but we have more senses that don't have organs.
Yeah, sure. There's that spatial awareness that we have. And there are a number of other things that you could regard as being extra senses. But what does your antenna, for example, give you in terms of extrasensory perceptions?
Well, it allows me to sense infrareds and ultraviolets, which are colors that we cannot sense through the eyes. So the antenna allows me to sense invisible colors. Also, it has internet connections, so this also allows me to connect to, in my case, to NASA's International Space Station, so then I can sense colors from space. So the antenna allows me to sense colors that are outside this planet and therefore explore space without having to physically go there. And, well, I have another implant, which I've only for the last 3 weeks that I have behind my knee that allows me to sense the magnetic north as well. So that's
which birds can sense exactly, when they migrate. There are a number of animals who actually use magnetism and magnetic north to be able to orientate themselves. This is amazing. How does it interface with your biology? Because there are devices that I suppose we can plug into computers and things that can tell us this information. Certainly, the world of physics and chemistry has been understood in new and interesting ways since we've been able to read nature and space and the spectrum and everything else a lot better. But how do you interpret this? How does it connect to your biological self?
So when you merge with this type of technology, at the beginning, it makes no sense, in the same way that I guess that when we are born, we are overloaded by a lot of senses, and then slowly our brain makes sense of it. So in the case of merging with AS, which would be artificial senses, the intelligence is slowly created by the brain, or the knowledge is slowly created by the brain. So you become slowly adapted to the new reality. And it's a slow process, I guess, and it slowly changes your perception, which also changes biologically your brain, and it depends on the implant, also changes your body.
There's a neuroplasticity involved in all of this too. Your brain is able to very quickly adapt to what new inputs and outputs it's given. But in your case, does this antenna connect directly to your cerebral cortex? How does it connect?
It's osseointegrated inside the skull, so it's merged with the bone, and then the vibration of color makes the bone vibrate. So that makes me hear the vibrations of color, but also feel the vibrations of color through bone conduction. So
that's incredible. How did you first interpret that, and how has it changed?
Well, at the beginning, it was a bit chaotic. All colors have different vibrations, so I was surprised to realize how many colors exist. When I was living in a grayscale world, because I see in grayscale, when I would ask what color things were, I didn't realize that color was everywhere, really. Color is absolutely everywhere. So even things that people say are white, they're not white, or people who say things are gray, they're not gray. So when you look at them carefully, they have color as well. So color is absolutely everywhere. And it took me years to actually get used to this new layer of perception.
Well, a lot of light is obviously the platform for color, and all light has an amplitude and a wavelength. And these are things that are already abundantly clear to physicists and to people who have studied optics and this kind of thing. So it makes perfect sense to me, but it must have been very, very difficult for you in the beginning to have figured out what signals were coming to you that were information and which might have been intuition or expression. And I mean, it helps that you're an artist, I suppose, because then you're able to turn that into something anyway, regardless of whether or not it's scientific information. But it must have opened up a world that the rest of us aren't aware of. Do you sometimes feel like you're privileged to information that we're not?
Well, anyone could have this. So I've explained how this antenna has been created. So if anyone would like to perceive more colors than their eyes, then they could do it. So it's...
they're just going to walk around like you do with an antenna coming out of their head.
Yes. So that would be the... That's the reason probably that most people don't do it.
Well, I'm interested also, and before you even get into the situation of color, I'll throw forward to this because I think a lot of people will want to know. You've had to put up quite a struggle in order to get to the point where you can walk around with an antenna and other extra sensory accessories, and you've had to fight some very prejudiced, traditional, sometimes backward people in terms of the way that they perceive this. They might think that you are self-absorbed, or that you're an artist who's trying to be different, when in actual fact, part of what you're doing is also research. Part of what you're doing is also science. It's also expanding the idea, the idea of how humans can evolve.
Well, I see myself as a cyborg artist, and I see the creation of new senses as an art, or the creation of new body parts as an art itself, and designing your own perception of reality as an art. So I think this is an art movement that for now is only a few that are exploring it. But I think that once there's more people creating new senses and new organs as an art movement, art practice, then it will become more normalized. But yes, at the beginning, most people would either laugh at me or think it was a bit stupid to do this, or why would I do this? Or if it's to for attention seeking, but it's not. My aim is to sense more and perceive more, and I see it as an art movement. But if we look at the way there isn't much more to discover in the planet. If we talk about continents and mountains or oceans to cross, and now we can actually discover the planet again if we add new senses. If you add a new sense, you can discover the planet in a way that maybe it has not been discovered yet. So it's a new way of exploration or discovery. By merging with technology, you reveal parts of nature that have never been perceived by humans. So this allows us to rediscover the planet, and that's what really encourages me, and it makes me ignore social reaction, because my aim is much, much more profound. It is to perceive nature in a deeper way.
Well, that requires a huge amount of self-confidence and belief in what you're doing, because most humans are more concerned about what other people think of them than anything else. That
yes.
Doesn't seem to bother you.
No, I had to get used to it. At the beginning, it was really annoying, and people pointing at me or laughing at me is every single day. It can be a bit tiring in the end. Also, bureaucratic things like renewing passports, going through security controls.
They think you can take it off and
Yeah, so I'm not wearing an antenna. I have an antenna in the same way that I have a nose. It's not removable. It's a body part. And I guess in the same way that many transgender had issues at the beginning and would say they're wearing breasts, they have breasts. And it might happen the same with trans species, that slowly we will see more people with new organs and new senses, and it will slowly become more normalized in society. But for now, it is a bit of a struggle.
Was it a struggle to persuade a doctor to help you create this implant and to attach it to yourself?
Yeah, I presented the antenna surgery to a bioethical committee, and they said it was not ethical to have this antenna surgically implanted.
On what grounds?
Because it's not a pre-existing body part. So if it was a leg or an arm, they would find it ethical. But an antenna is not a human body part, so they didn't find it ethical. The second reason, because it's not a pre-existing sense, it's not hearing or seeing, it's perceiving color through vibrations in the bone, which also include colors that are not traditionally perceived by humans. So infrared perception and ultraviolet perception is not human, so they didn't find it ethical. And the third reason, they were very worried about the image the hospital would have if someone would come out with an antenna sticking out of the head. So these were the three main reasons. But then they helped me find a doctor that was willing to do it anonymously. So in the same way the transgender surgeries were done anonymously in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and now there's many countries that accept these types of surgery. It might happen the same with trans species surgeries, that we will find a country accepting these surgeries as ethical. And I think they are ethical, and society will find them ethical.
Listen, the medical community are hardly in a position to be telling us what's ethical and what isn't, when they've been experimenting on live humans for how many years, when they willing to chop at people's genitals for religious reasons, when they're quite happy to spend a lot of their time doing experimental drug tests on people. It's not as if they're entirely morally in a position of superiority. What I'm curious about is the new one, the one behind your knee. What are you looking to gain from that particular?
Well, there's studies that say that we used to sense the magnetic north, and that's a sense that we've lost. And the aim of this project is to see if the implant will awake a dormant sense, which in this
Why
case,
behind the knee?
There's studies that say that we have photoreceptors at the back of the knee, and that sensing the magnetic north alters the photoreceptors. So maybe our sense of north was behind the knee. And since we wear long trousers, maybe this sense has been lost. So I think that maybe having this compass behind my knee will awake my sense of magnetic north. And that's an experiment that I'm doing with two other artists, Moon Rivas and Manuel Muñoz. We three of us had it implanted a month ago in Barcelona.
How long are you going to give it before you consider that the experiment is a waste of time, because you might discover that there is no value to it?
Yeah, I suggested a few months, but they suggested a year. So we might actually wait a year and see if we feel anything. Maybe one of the three will start feeling magnetic north, maybe not.
You mentioned how you sometimes have trouble with the bureaucrats when they think that you can take off your antenna. In your 2004 British passport application, they wouldn't let you appear with it in a photograph.
Yeah, so I replied saying that what they were seeing in the image was not an electronic device, because the rules say that you cannot appear on the passport photo with any electronic devices. So I replied saying that this is a body part, not an electronic device, and that it should be considered a body part, and that I identified as a cyborg, as being a union between cybernetics and an organism. So they replied saying no again. So it became like a small battle with the UK passport office. And after some months, they finally accepted it and they allowed me to appear in the passport with the first antenna prototype from 2004. And then pictures were renewed when the antenna was implanted.
So now it's on your passport photograph.
Yes, yes.
And they eventually accepted it and everything's okay.
Well, in 2014, I had to renew my UK passport and it happened the same. So even if I had the old passport and I appeared with they still wanted more explanations. So I had, in this case, they called me and emailed me.
And the word cyborg, for most of us, we think of science fiction. We think of a half man, half machine. Sometimes it's quite frightening in science fiction. Sometimes these are dangerous creatures. How do you see the word? How do you see the species? How do you see a description of people like you who are not afraid to evolve in new directions?
Well, I went to San Francisco to speak to Manfred Kleins, and he's the man that invented the word cyborg. He's 94 maybe now, and I went there to ask him what does cyborg mean exactly, because the word has been used in so many different ways. And his reply lasted 2 days. So his answer was a 2-day-long answer. In the end, he said that even riding a bicycle is a cyborg, because you are merging with technology, with something that is not human, and the bicycle alters your sense of balance, so it alters your senses as well. So in a way, it made me think that maybe cyborg is more of a sense of identity, and whoever identifies or feels that technology is part of their identity, then they're probably cyborgs. And in my case, I feel that cybernetics have become part of my identity, and I don't see it different from my organic parts. So I feel that I am a cyborg, regardless of what your body might be like. You might identify as a cyborg as well if you feel that technology is part of your identity.
Well, people are talking about wearables now. And it's just a small hop, skip, and jump from a wearable to a permanent new organ. It's not that difficult for most people to imagine now. It might have been before.
Not even a wearable. If you notice how people talk about their mobile phones, maybe 20 years ago people would say, "My mobile phone is running out of battery," and now many people say, "I'm running out of battery." Just by saying "I'm running out of battery," you are talking about technology in first person, and you are including yourself and technology as both part of your identity. So there's already a change, and technology is already part of our identity, and many are already psychological cyborgs. The next step is that some people will also be biological cyborgs, and people will also merge with this technology.
Some people say it's inevitable. Some people say that this is not something to be fearful of or skeptical or even philosophical about. It's something that it's going to happen.
Hopefully it will be optional, not inevitable, so the people will be able to decide whether or not they want to merge with technology.
But surely they would do it on the basis that there would be more advantages to disadvantages, and in that respect, most people would want to try. Do you think you're a bit of a pioneer in this area?
There will be people that will not merge with technology, and I guess this will be also a strong movement of people who don't want to merge with technology, and people who will, maybe they will, yeah, the, most people might end up merging with technology, but I'm sure there'll be many people not merging. But
they'll be like the Amish, you know.
Maybe.
They'll be like the Amish. They'll be living in villages and using horse and cart and building barns, and you know, they'll be sweet, and we'll look back on them and say, isn't that nice?
I think it's as respectful as any other type of existence, and I think that's what we should try to...
Yeah, cavemen were also, they had a respectable existence, but they were cavemen. I mean, we got to keep moving. That's why I kind of respect what you're doing.
I think there's different types of... I don't think the future is just one. I think we have to start accepting different types of futures. There's not just one future. There's many futures, and what is important is that anyone should have access to this type of technology, and if they don't want to merge with technology...
Of course, free choice.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm not saying everyone should be forced at gunpoint to have to become a cyborg, but certainly I think to many people there would be advantages to that. Before we get into the advantages and disadvantages of your own circumstances, do you keep the antenna attached when you sleep?
It's not attached, it's implanted, so it's not removable.
You can't, can you sleep on your back?
Yes.
Okay, it doesn't hurt, it doesn't irritate you, get in the way. You don't worry about it getting loose.
My arms go in the way. It was more.
Yeah, I get that problem too.
Arms are more annoying than an antenna, but we get used to it.
You don't have a special pillow or anything.
Well, I have a pillow that charges myself.
Oh,
so.
That's good. That's very handy.
Yeah, there's mobile phones that can be charged as well through induction. So my head can be charged through induction as well.
Were you worried at any stage that things like an induction charge could interfere with your brain? Could, you know, people talk about how mobile technology, how cell phones, we don't know yet whether or not the microwaves and the other dangerous radiation that could come from these phones might be affecting us negatively. Did you think about that before you did the implants?
Yes, in the same way that if you want to climb the Himalayas, you have to think that there's a risk in any type of things that maybe have a bit of, there's usually something stronger than the risks. And in my case, there is a risk. Maybe I'm killing myself slowly, or maybe this will have a bad consequence, but the aim of exploring or discovering the planet is much stronger than this fear. And I think that's also with people who actually are wearing mobile phones. Maybe that's something that we are all guinea pigs in a way. We are all doing things that have never been done before. So we might all be in danger and we don't know it or not. I think we should follow our intuition. And if you feel that it's right, then you do it. And in my case, I'm following my intuition and I don't feel that it's harming myself. Otherwise, I would change it or try to find a better way.
There are people who take medication for psychological conditions. There are people who take medication for recreational purposes, and they're all making choices as well. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm certainly not suggesting that you should or shouldn't based on anyone else's recommendation. But there are dangers to everything in life, you know? You got to weigh it up.
Yeah, the we don't know if it's dangerous or not. Therefore, I'll do it anyway, I guess.
No, that's a perfect acceptable answer, you know? That
but
works.
That's maybe one of the reasons why trans-species surgeries are not allowed yet, and they have to be done in such a way.
So the doctor's anonymous and so on.
Because
they're worried.
We have no idea what the secondary effects might be, so they prefer not to do it.
Well, that's again why I think you're a pioneer in this respect. And we may have people in the future who will write books about how you were one of the first people to take that leap. I didn't realize when you said earlier that before your implant, you saw in grayscale. What I wasn't aware of is that you actually had an extreme form of color blindness. And obviously, you still can't see in color, but you now can feel in color, which is a different kind of sensation. But as an artist, how has that allowed you to create art in a way that you couldn't before?
I see in grayscale, and that's something I didn't want to change because seeing in grayscale has many advantages. Better night vision, for example.
Do I look better in grayscale? bring in someone who has normal vision here and let's just compare. Anything to make me look better, I'd take the advice.
I didn't want to change my sight.
yes.
So I wanted to have a sense of color that would not alter my sight. And that's why I started this project. And yeah, hearing color means that I can now use color as sound. So I can compose music through color, or I can paint what I hear through. So music can be painted or the other way around. So yes, it's changed. Having a new sense means that you can express yourself through new means, and I guess that's why I see it as an art, because if you have new senses, you can create new types of artwork through these new senses. So this opens up a whole lot of possibilities in art.
Yeah, you're very much an individual. I mean, I haven't met that many people with an antenna. And when you were younger, you lived in a tree for, how long was it?
9 days, yes.
You just decided you were going to live in a tree.
Well, because they wanted to cut the trees.
Right,
so
you were saving the tree, but you climbed into it. You stayed up there for 9 days.
Yes.
No food? No water? Did you?
I had a system, like a rope.
A pulley system, okay. Yeah, so you could get up some sustenance. Did you save the tree?
Yes, it's still
there. Well done. Tree's still there?
Yes.
Are you one of those people who feels that wherever there is life, there's a kind of communication. We just haven't necessarily understood it properly. That all living things have an aspect of personality, of being able to express themselves.
Yes, and becoming a cyborg is part of this. It's people think that by becoming a cyborg, you become more like a machine. But it's not like this. In my case, I become closer to nature, and opening up these new senses can also allow us to understand other species, and including plants or other kingdoms as well, in ways that we have never connected. In the example of sensing infrareds or ultraviolets, this connects me with other species in ways that it didn't before. Like, there's many species that sense infrared and ultraviolet. So if I observe how they behave and I observe that there's infrared or ultraviolet around them, it makes me understand them a bit better. And there's so many senses that if we had, we would connect with other species and other forms of life in ways that we are not connecting now. So I think that can change a lot the way we relate to other species and nature in general.
Do you, with the institution that you began, the Cyborg Foundation, are you meeting more people who feel the same way? Is it a growing community?
Yes, and the last project of the Cyborg Foundation is the Transspecies Society, which is an association based in Barcelona where we create senses and organs in community, and we give voice to non-human identities. There's people that feel trapped in the body of a human since they were born, and that's why they want to have new senses and new organs. Other people that maybe don't feel 100% human because they've merged with technology, and that makes them feel less or a different type of species. And others for social reasons that they might not feel 100% human. So that's a project that we've started now, that we give voice to these non-human identities and we create these senses and organs in community.
I like the description you gave earlier of the way people are saying, I'm running out of battery, for example, because this helps me to bridge that divide. Because I often think when I hear about people who aren't happy being in the human body that they're in, I often think that that's like a mental illness thing. And I'm not trying to be judgmental, but I have met people who do have like either a severe body dysmorphia, or they feel that there is a gender assignment that they don't entirely identify with. And there are all kinds of explanations for that. And many of them perhaps fall into the world of psychiatry and psychology. But in many cases, your description of how people have started to refer to their mobile phones as part of them is probably a much more easy to understand concept for a lot of people. Will you get people who want to be part of a trans species movement who you can identify are primarily whack jobs? They're not really thinking about it like you have, trying to discover the meaning of the term cyborg, trying to find new ways to understand the world through their senses, these extrasensory devices, and they become part of their body. But they're instead mad and attention-seeking. And how do you differentiate between those? Because those people can often send an important foundation, an important institute like what you're trying to establish into the world of nutcases and lunatics. And then people won't take you as seriously as you'd like. Not that you're trying to get people to do anything, but you're certainly adding, I think, some value to the discussion.
Yeah, we do talk a lot with, and you notice the differences. There's different types of reasons why one might identify as a cyborg or as a trans species, and we do talk via Skype usually with these people before we might start a project with them, and you can easily notice. But yes, some people might be regarded as mad now, but they are not mad. They're simply not understood. I don't know.
If I called you up on Skype and I said, Neil, I'm very interested in joining your organization, and then you went on Skype and you saw me in a Darth Vader mask, and I was going the whole time, you would know straight away this is someone who's not really serious about this.
If we talked for a while, maybe you would remove the mask, and we would find out that maybe there's something much deeper inside of you.
Yeah. You don't have that kind of time. Come on, you're a busy man. You don't want to sit doing a psychotherapy session with me for hours to try and figure out if I'm the real deal.
Yeah, there's different, I guess it's hard. Sometimes there's different type of reasons why one might feel transpicious.
Are there extremes where you could get so involved in this idea? And I'm not saying for you personally, but perhaps you've encountered people who have gone this way, where they start to, like someone who is very interested in tattoos, they start getting too many and they become addicted to the process rather than the eventual aim, the goal, which should be something transcendent. Instead, they get caught up in the actual practice. Like they become really, really turned on by the idea of having a ton of accessories implanted into their bodies. That clearly is something that would also be considered probably unhealthy. Do you encounter people who have that sort of problem, or is that not something you've dealt with?
Not yet, no, because usually with one sense, it's quite complex to create the sense and the organ, so you wouldn't find more than one, no. But yeah, with all these projects that we start with people, we don't just start a project. We do, first of all, a bit of background. They need to understand who they are, what they feel. And so we usually do a chronology of their lives before we can actually start thinking about what sense and organ you want to have. And mm-hmm. there needs to be a profound reason why they want this new sense and new organ. Otherwise, we don't start the project with them. So with the first question you asked, we do a bit of like workshop of that sometimes can last months, just understanding who they are themselves and what they want and what sense and organ they want. Because sometimes it can be complex to decide what sense exactly you want and how you want to perceive this new input and in what form of organ you want to receive this input. So it's a long process.
And I would imagine sometimes it doesn't work and sometimes it does.
Yes. So that's also... before going directly to an implant, we use an exosense, which is permanently attached outside for a few months or even years. And then the body, the person gets used to it or not. And then if not, there's changes made to the sense or to the organ. And then once you feel prepared, then we go for the implant. So it's not like a fast process.
With your antenna, have you ever found distinct advantages with respect to people or information that has helped you in some way that before you perhaps weren't privy to because you didn't have an antenna?
Yeah, well, like things like, something so simple as that humans are black and white, which is something that when I was growing up, I thought I was a type of white and black was a type of black. This is something that really shocked me because when I started hearing colors of skins, I realized that we are all the same hue, which is orange. So the fact, if you listen or if you look carefully, like someone says my skin is black, it's not actually black. It's very, very, very dark orange. And people who say they're white, they're not white. They're very, very light orange as well.
Wow.
And so
I like this because if you boil it down from the point of view of science, where it's actually about the light we're reflecting that gives us a color or absorbing, not about the actual surface, right? So what you're saying is that the way you perceive it is an orange.
Yeah, because if you put the skins in the same white light,
yes,
and you compare the frequency of skins, they all create the same hue, which is orange. And so that's one of the things, like the fact that when I was growing up, this told me humans are black and white, and it's not. We are all orange, different types of orange. Other things, like cities are gray, cities are not gray. This is also something that when I was growing up, I thought, so cities are gray. They're not gray. It's full of color, and it's almost impossible to find gray. Even stones, if you look them carefully, they're not gray. Gray stones have many different colors in it, especially unsaturated browns or unsaturated yellows. So it's hard to find gray. So cities are not gray. And yeah, I think it's changed my perception of things that maybe before I would not like supermarkets. For me now, they're very beautiful because they have so many colors, and they sound to me like different melodies. So I enjoy walking around supermarkets, which is something I didn't before.
Can you describe how the sound of ultraviolet or infrared is to people like me who don't know where to start with something like that?
Well, infrared is low frequency, so it's a very profound
buzz.
That's infrared. Right. Okay. And then you go higher, then you have the visual spectrum first for the visual spectrum,
like
and then you go up to ultraviolet, which is very high. And then there's
is
lots
any of this
ultraviolet.
Painful to hear?
Yeah, ultraviolet can be very painful. So when I connect to NASA's International Space Station, it's a bit too much because there's lots of ultraviolets in space, so it's very overwhelming to perceive the colors of space. Space is not
and there's no
dark.
Atmosphere to filter it.
No, exactly. So it's pure frequencies, and it's very close to each other. So it's not very pleasant.
Do you spend a lot of time on the internet?
Well, to connect to NASA's International Space Station.
No, I mean just generally in terms of kind of finding information, trying to connect to, you know, other people who are interested in the stuff you're interested in, research.
Not much, no.
Because you can connect with your antenna, right? It's Wi-Fi enabled. So.
Yes, but I use it to receive colors from 5 people, so people can send colors to my head. But I could use it to receive phone calls as well, but I don't. I just use it to receive colors.
And the phone calls would again play through sound into the bone.
In the bone, yes.
And then you can hear someone talking?
Yes. That's I did incredible. It once with Ruby Wax. In English. She called my head for the first time. The first time I tried this system was with Ruby Wax, and I could hear her voice in my head. And then we stopped because...
Well, it hurt.
Because she couldn't hear me. As it's just the one way...
Yeah, of course, you can't.
I have no microphone, so she was just saying, can you hear me? Can you hear me? I was saying,
did you ever try Google Glass?
I tried them. Someone allowed me to try them.
Huh? Not your thing?
No, I don't like glasses in general. I should wear glasses because I don't see in one eye, but I don't like wearing things.
Wouldn't it be great when we get to the stage where we have figured out what that overlay, that overlap, that juncture is between biology and technology? I think that's going to be exciting when we can plug directly into devices where we need to. And again, it's a choice thing. And for some people, they'll consider it part of themselves. Other people would consider it an external device. But I think it would be a great thing for us to be able to upload a language and communicate more effectively. Or discover something that interests us and spend the night downloading those files while we sleep and learning while your brain is busy doing all the other things that it does.
I think the merging with technology might just be something of the 21st century. And then what we'll see is that we'll start 3D printing these new organs, not using wires and chips, but we'll be 3D printing these new organs, and we'll be adding these new sensors by genetically modifying ourselves, because once we can do this, we won't need the cybernetics, and we'll be able to design ourselves genetically, and also 3D printing with DNA 3D printers, we will be able to have new organs without having to use all these electric devices. So I think this is just temporary, the merging with technology. I think what we'll see as a renaissance of our species is the fact that we'll start adding these sensors and organs organically.
Do you have any kind of spiritual take on organs that we've lost the use of, organs that we have that we're maybe not aware of, that are underutilized, that have become through evolution less adapted than our other organs? And what I mean by spiritually is there's this world that we don't understand. There are a lot of inputs that perhaps we aren't good at interpreting. There are a lot of things that we may have the capacity to understand if we evolved them and if we worked on them hard enough. And in your case, you can hear colors, for example. Are there other areas that interest you in terms of things that we may have lost that we can regain or new things that we can grow?
Well, I'm designing the sense of time now. We all have a sense of time, but we don't have an organ for the sense of time. So It's almost finished. It's an organ for the sense of time that will be implanted between the skin and the bone around my head. So it's a circular organ, like a crown, inner crown. And it will give me a point of heat that will slowly go around the head, and it will take 24 hours to do the complete circle. So I will feel the rotation of the earth in my body, and this should give me an organ for the sense of time. And the aim is to see if my brain will get used to it. And once it gets used to it, I want to see if I can modify my perception of time by making the point of heat go a bit slower. I should feel that time is stretching, or if I want time to go faster, I'll make it go a bit faster. So the aim of the project is to see if I can create time illusions in a way to bring Albert Einstein's theory of time relativity into practice and see whether or not we can modify our perception of time if we have an organ for time.
That's fantastic.
This would allow us to travel in time, for example, or to decide how long we want the situation to last, or to change our perception of age. So in the long term, if I want to live 200 years, there's two ways. I can make my body live 200 years, or make my brain believe that I've lived 200 years, and I want to try this second way of
and frame. We know that these things are possible because we've seen people alter their perception of reality in other ways already.
Yeah, optical illusions are possible because we have an organ for sight. So time illusions should be possible if we create an organ for the sense of time. So that's I want to try this.
This is fascinating. Now, what's on your agenda here in South Africa? You here to deliver a talk?
Yes, I came here because SAS invited me to give a talk about technology, how this is changing society, and how AI and AS is closer than we maybe were prepared for, and how this is changing the ways we interact with people as well.
Are you at all concerned about your new senses being hacked? Are you concerned that there are people who will be able to hijack those messages, those signals that you get, and give you the same altered sense of reality that you could create for yourself, and be manipulated by these things?
Yeah, well, through all these years, I've only been physically hacked once. So someone without permission sent colors to my head.
Son of a bitch. Did you find them?
I actually liked it. So it was a good experience to be hacked. I didn't find it a bad thing. But if it became a bad thing, you can always disconnect the internet. So all these organs should have a system that you would be able to
shut down
the internet connection so that then this person stops. But yeah, that's why we presented the Cyborg rights at South by Southwest last year, and one of them is that we should have the right to decide who has permission to enter our bodies through the internet, or and also other rights and laws that we think society should, and governments especially, should start talking about.
Incredible. Have you ever imagined that you might go back to not having an antenna?
No, I don't think so. No.
So one day when you are finished, we'll bury you with it.
Well, I'm donating my organs, and the antenna is included. So someone will have my antenna implanted when I die. So the antenna will continue alive, as well as my other organs. It's in my donation of organs.
Incredible. Neil, you're a fascinating guy. I'm very happy I got to speak to you.
Thank you.
This is terrific stuff you're doing. I'm blown away. I mean, it really does require you to sit down and think very carefully about what it is to be a living creature, how we can add to these things with technology and consider them organs, and how it has to do with identification and who you think you are, what's important. I love it. Terrific stuff. Congratulations on what you're doing.
Thank you.
Neil Harbison, the world's only cyborg. This is CliffCentral.com.